And now it is time to head over to the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to another week on planet Earth. And we're going to bring a little bit of future news to you for this next half hour. Then we're going to have more news, but from our correspondents down at
PRLA.
Exactly. All kinds of exciting new stuff coming our way that will promise to evolve and amaze us. And right now, we're going to go for some of the fresh news. First of all, thank you, Mrs. Future, for once again doing the board and bringing us on air.
Well, you're very welcome.
The whole crew behind you at KSCO.
That's right. A lot of human know-how going into this radio station, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. We've just been figuring out how to make connections with Rosie when she's in CERN.
That's right.
Next month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this week, we are trying to do communications with, not us personally, we wish, but this is a new Mars lander that just took off for the Red Planet. Mm-hmm. Just this week. And I think Rosie was at that down at Vandenberg. It was the first interplanetary mission launched from Vandenberg. They've always been done from Florida. So it's kind of interesting that that's happening here on the West Coast now. Mm-hmm. NASA's called InSight Mars launched on May 5th, and it was a very successful launch. It was fun to watch it take off.
Yeah.
And its suite of instruments is a little different from our previous Martian explorations. This probe is going to look at the internal elements of the planet. It's going to go below the surface and
dig a little deeper, as it were.
Yeah, so to speak. And they're going to look at the interior. It's going to burrow 16 feet into the planet physically. And it'll have a seismometer that'll look for Mars quakes that are happening or may be happening whenever a meteorite hits, for example. You'll get a little Mars quake. And they'll hopefully provide us some tools about how it's actually created.
Right. And with the Mars window opening up every 2 years for launch opportunities, basically this vehicle has about 2 years before they start getting bombarded with humans.
Yes. So it's a good time to look now while it's sparse.
That's right. While it's just robots.
Yeah. And the other thing is that the crust on Mars, the surface, is really old. It's been around for billions of years. While on Earth, our plate tectonics is gone. We have a very dynamic surface on this planet. So the structure of our crust is pretty new. So we'll be able to look at Mars, which hasn't changed for a very, very long time, and be able to see maybe a little bit about solar system formation and how that happened.
Oh, okay. So they're going to be looking at the steady state of Mars.
There'll be a time machine for how the solar system evolved
from
billions of years ago.
Mars selfie will show us what Earth looked like at the same time in the formation of the universe.
Yeah.
However many billions of years ago.
And what's also exciting about this is that they launched two small little satellites with the main one. They're about the size of a briefcase. They'll be traveling alongside the InSight Mars lander as it heads to Mars. Yeah, like little...
A rocket with a briefcase?
Yeah, two briefcases.
Two briefcases. Oh, my. Those must be some pretty awesome luggage.
Well, they're officially dubbed CubeSats because of their shape and their small size. They detached from the Atlas rocket as it went up. CubeSats will go into orbit around the planet, and they'll monitor the InSight craft for a little period of time around its landing point. Make sure it went down okay and that it's transmitting properly. Mm-hmm. And they're not really needed to communicate after that because we have already much more sophisticated transceivers in orbit around Mars that will take the signal from InSight and send it back to us.
I see. So these are just cameras for the landing?
Well, they're kind of a test of this new small, super micro-scale satellite technology.
Oh, to see if it can orbit Mars.
Yeah, it'll be a much cheaper way of exploring the solar system if it works. Hmm. Our current landers are, billion dollars plus.
Sure.
Right? So these CubeSats are...
go and put them in orbit around some of the celestial bodies, we can have a live streaming show, say, from Mars.
But remember, the main thing is we're looking at how all this got here. How did the solar system end? What is going on here? Why do we have these trillions of planets, suns in which they rotate around? What the hell is going on here? So that'll help us figure out a little bit more of that big mystery by looking specifically at how our solar system evolves. Hmm. That's kind of exciting. That just happened. I'm sure Rosie will have more to share on that if she hasn't already.
Yes, she's done a few morning shows with all that enthusiasm.
Exactly. And speaking of Mars, there is a Human to Mars summit going on right now.
Where
is it? It's online, I'll tell you that much. Started this morning at 8:35. We have a link to it. We'll be featuring information about our plans with Mars and the Trump administration and NASA and returning humans to the moon and Mars, but specifically, what's the thing about Mars that's going up. And one of the highlights of the conference will be a panel session that involves what's called The First, which is a new television series on Hulu. That's created by the House of Cards creator, Bo Willimon, starring Sean Penn. The show follows an astronaut crew as they become the first to land on Mars.
This is a fictional show.
Yeah, it's a fictional show. So they'll be talking a little bit about that on one of the panels. Other sessions will have a congressional panel discussion where they're looking at what are our key decisions that we need to make in Congress to go to Mars? What would be the critical Mars science that needs to be happening? What's the economics and the manufacturing of space exploration itself? Where is that going? Never mind artificial intelligence and how that's going to play a role in our Martian explorations. So that's happening now. And you could go to our links page, drfutureshow.com/links. Click on that, read more about it, and if you want to actually go there, there's a link for actually going there. As to where it is in physical space and time, I have no idea.
Okay, so it's in online reality.
I would guess because it has congressional people in it, it's probably D.C.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
But hey, when it's online, people can be anywhere.
That's right. It doesn't matter. They could be on Mars.
Well, probably not on Mars. Probably that's not a bit of a latency
delay.
It's,
10 minutes. 10 minutes delay. If it was the moon, maybe a second and a half.
Okay, so they can listen, but not necessarily ask questions.
Yeah, if you don't mind waiting 10 minutes for an answer.
Sure. Well, once the show gets going, it's all 10 minutes delay. Yeah. It's just that first 10 minutes when you want to talk back, then you have to wait.
Yes, what are you saying?
It's a 20-minute wait while your question goes in and then the response comes back to you.
It's kind of hard to have a heated discussion with 10-minute delay between
responses. Definitely hard. Right. Yeah. I'd say texting is probably better.
Yeah.
All right, guess what?
It's time for break.
Break time.
All right.
We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
And speaking of being here, Breakthrough Listen is a new project to see if we're alone here or not.
We're
hopefully
listening
we have company.
To Breakthrough the vastness Listen. Of space.
That's right.
To see if we're alone. I think we have already been doing that. And we thought we were, but now we're guessing
to confirm that we're alone.
That's
that
true, we're not.
A true skeptic.
The Drake equation says, statistically, we're probably not alone.
I'm going to look for millions of planets, but I bet you we won't find anybody else but us.
At least not anybody else speaking our language.
That's right. They speak English anyway. Except maybe if there are alien AIs. I'll figure it out real fast.
There you go. Maybe the AIs can talk to each other.
But what if the AIs created biological? What if the original life forms were information-based?
Well, if you think ecosystem as computer, then everything's a big AI.
Then we're the AIs. Become artificial.
We're aspiring to be AIs. We're not there yet.
Well, I'm thinking that if it's an advanced alien AI that might have created biological life, you never know, right? I mean, the universe is a strange place.
Yeah, I was imagining the primordial soup as a big cloud network.
More gooey. Or more informational, infospherical.
Definitely gooey.
Gooey, okay. All right. Well, it's a personal preference, it seems to me. Be that as it may, space.com did a really interesting piece on Breakthrough Listen, which launched a new search for ET across millions of stars. Millions. Breakthrough Listen, they got $100 million to seek out potential signals from intelligent extraterrestrial life.
It's a dollar per star.
I'll look there for a dollar. Yeah, they took a giant leap forward yesterday with a new campaign to search for life faster than ever before. Okay, they're using the Parkes Radio Telescope in New South Wales, Australia. They'll scan millions of stars in the Milky Way's galactic plane over the next 60 days.
I guess because that's the thickest concentration of stars and planets.
You get the most bang for your buck there, mm-hmm. so to speak. This will allow them to look at it more in less time, yeah, increasing their chances of maybe hopefully finding something of interest there. And this telescope is operated by the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, CSIRO. And they have a new, what they call a multi-beam receiver, which means it uses 13 beams to observe large pieces of the sky all at the same time. And with those capabilities, they'll be looking at the sky in more detail than ever before, and that these huge data sets they're collecting will hopefully have some signatures in them of a technological civilization. They hope to uncover evidence of something intelligent in all that data from all those stars.
Good luck.
Yeah, so they're looking. They kind of know what intelligent data looks like. Like intelligent data would be something that resembles our cell phone transmissions or our television and radio transmissions or telephone signaling schemes.
The various looks more like signal than it looks like noise. Is that
something
what
that has
for?
Some kind of order to it that stands out from the
background.
Rest of the universe? Yeah, the background. Which
the
doesn't
chaos.
Have a lot of most
we're looking
of the universe,
for order in the midst of chaos.
We have not found anything in the universe that looks like us. That's
well,
at least in the way we
presume that communication looks like order, but I think
order out of chaos.
Human experience might prove that human communication looks more like chaos than it looks like order.
Yeah, well, paradigm, boundaries, context is the key for understanding. It used to be the context that radio waves were what to look for extraterrestrial intelligence. Then it went more to light. Maybe they used photonic, like we got into fiber optic cables and started seeing how light could be used. So we started looking for photons. So, yeah, it's an evolving thing. But we're always looking for some kind of order, though. We're not looking for a random pattern. Random patterns seem to exist plenty in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But having some kind of order...
That's rare.
Yeah, and we've seen a few things. One of the things that their researchers are particularly interested in is what are called fast radio bursts, or FRBs. And these are quick, vibrant radio pulses. And they've intrigued our scientists for years because they're unusual and they seem to be even extragalactic coming from other galaxies.
You know, I just thought if we have fast radio beams that allow us to look for life, we could call them fur balls.
Furb balls?
F-R-B-A-L-L. Fur balls.
I see. And why balls?
They allow us to look for life. They're FRBs that allow us to look for life. Fur balls.
Oh, okay. All right.
But
well, you have a sense of humor that transcends mine.
Nobody's laughing.
Well, you couldn't hear them if they did.
Nobody in this room is laughing.
Yeah. So just to complete on our Breakthrough Listen project, the last project they looked on was Oumuamua. Oumuamua.
That's the name of a project?
Yeah.
Oumuamua?
Yeah. Well, it was that first interstellar object that we observed in our solar system.
Oh,
were they
right.
Talking about that? It kind of looks like a giant cigar.
Yeah, a metal cigar.
Well, they didn't detect anything coming from it. They were hoping that maybe it might be a spaceship or something. Or something.
No hailing frequencies coming from Oumuamua.
No. Still, if there's intelligent life beaming signals from a nearby galaxy or even our own, they hope to find it. And I don't know why it's only 60 days, but that's apparently their...
Maybe that's why they're trying to do it so fast.
1,500 hours in 60 days.
Hey, ETs out there, if you want to call us, you have 60 days to get your message through.
Yeah, no, only takes...
They're going to spend $100 million in 60 days. Whoa.
Well, I'm just inferring that. That's their budget. But they say their project's only 60, so, you know, we'll keep an eye on them.
I guess the rest is for the hot tub and the research afterwards.
Yeah. Well, they do need to have a support system. Okay, back to other interesting, far-out, super future news of the moment. We have Uber.
Uber.
Uber coming
in. In the news again?
Yeah. This time they've unveiled a flying taxi, or at least a basic idea of what they want in a flying taxi. And they're showing various potential manufacturers what would be perfect for Uber.
Oh, I am biting my tongue on all the things I could say about Uber and flying taxis after you remember what the last round of Uber stories were about. Their nebulous claim to fame, being the very first autonomous car company to...
The accident?
To kill a pedestrian.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a land vehicle.
We can trust them with a flying vehicle. Yeah. A flying autonomous car is going to be so much safer because there's no pedestrians in
Not as much traffic.
No pedestrians at all. I think we're safe.
Yeah. Birds, maybe. Might have to think about birds.
Yeah.
But the flying taxis, they see it as the future for them. They're a fervent believer in flying taxis. They think it'll deal with congestion nicely because a big problem with cars is congestion, being stuck in traffic, as probably many of you are right now out there on our wonderful freeways. They call this the common reference model because if the companies could create this model, it would work. So the concept is as follows. It's all electric. It seats four people and a pilot in a single file, though, like a very slim cylindrical body with large windows so everyone can look out.
A cigarette fuselage.
Yes, or a cigar.
A cigar.
Umama.
Oh, I thought perhaps it was even more slender. Okay. Yeah.
It looks a little bit like a catamaran.
A catamaran. Okay, so we have a fuselage with a couple of catamaran legs.
Well, they call them in aircraft nacelles.
Oh.
Nacelles. And they're suspended on each side on slender little supports. Looks very much like a little catamaran. But those are the battery pods because electricity takes a lot of power. And on top of each are stacked rotors. So you have on these outboard pods stacked rotors, which provide the electrical vertical lift for takeoff and landing. And at the back, where the tail would be on a conventional plane, you have a propeller that faces forwards. And that's what you use for horizontal flight.
Oh, okay.
Right. So
they've got drone propellers over these nacelles that go up and down.
Right.
And then they've got a big propeller in the back to push it forward. Okay. Yeah.
And there's just one door on the one side, so it simplifies ground operations.
Mm-hmm.
No need for extra steps or worrying about people getting off on the wrong side of the plane on a landing pad.
Mm-hmm.
Also, their specs are that they want it to cruise between 150 and 200 miles an hour.
Okay. That's the distance then. They've got a...
150 and 200 miles an hour for 2,000 feet above the ground.
They're rated for 60 minutes. They're rated for 100 miles then. Or
well, if you got 60 minutes, they'd be ecstatic. Mm-hmm. They want 60 miles range.
Oh, 60 miles. Oh, okay. Yeah. So they can go 100 to 150, but they can only go 60
miles.
Yeah,
maybe 30 minutes of power.
30 minutes of power for four passengers. Boy.
Yeah.
It's not sounding very realistic.
Well, this is the spec, right? Mm-hmm. This is what all the companies have to meet if they're going to get Uber's business.
Mm-hmm.
A single charge will be good enough for 60 miles of range, and Uber expects the thing to need just 5 minutes to top up the batteries between flights.
Charging a battery for 5 minutes? Oh,
that's
they are
their spec,
dreaming.
Yeah. They know they're pushing all the folks into this.
All right. Well, have you heard of a battery that can run
for
60
minutes? Yeah, there's a number of experimental batteries that can charge really fast.
And
when they figure that out, it will change everything. And it means it'll be faster to charge your vehicle than it does to fill up on gasoline now. That's one of the things.
Yeah, that'll be a tipping point.
And initially, they'll accept having a human pilot, but they think that'll be phased out sooner rather than later.
Well, I guess if they dump the pilot, then the passengers can fly for an extra 5 minutes and feel much safer because it'll be autonomous.
Well, you could have an extra passenger, I suppose.
Oh, I suppose. That's the other alternative.
Yeah. One person, that's a lot when you net times millions, you know, in terms of rides.
Sure.
Uber themselves have no intention of actually building this. This is their spec. They just want the companies to do this. They want to be the middleman. They want to connect the pilots and the passengers.
Okay, so they'll do the software, they'll get the insurance, they'll hire the drivers, they'll contract with the vehicle providers.
They'll do the Uber thing.
And they'll rate the customers, they'll collect the money.
2020 is when they'll be demonstrating these first flights.
Right.
2020.
Okay, so Uber is taking to the skies.
Yep, they like to push the technology in that direction.
All right, so in 2020, we'll do a little recap and see how far they got.
And you'll see how many of the teams out there actually can live up to this. Should be interesting.
Okay, Dr. Future, we're ready for Ben Fuchs right now.
All right, and then an update on what happened in L.A. last week.
At WBR LA. We'll be right back.
Hi, registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs here. I've been studying healthy bodies for 35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change your life. It might not be as exciting and as sexy as the latest formula, nutritional or herbal or otherwise, but it is the ultimate healing strategy and one that we can do ourselves. Hiding behind all chronic degenerative disease is an activated stress response system. It's part of our genetic heritage that keeps us alive in emergency situations. If we're dealing with any chronic degenerative disease, on some level, the body is trying to protect us. And it doesn't have to be an immediate survival threat to kick in. It can be activated when we're nutrient deficient or oxygen deficient, or when we're freaked out about our families or our jobs. Most of the symptoms of health challenges are a direct result of activation of this emergency system and the body's long-term chronic fear for its survival. And that means hypertension, heart disease, osteoporosis, frequent colds and infections, and ultimately even cancer. We can learn to consciously turn the volume down on the survival alert system. We can learn to relax. And that is the ultimate healing strategy. Simple relaxation opposes the activity and the symptoms of the survival system activation. Instead of heart disease, you'll have heart health as the system improves oxygenation of the blood. Rather than wrinkles, you'll have younger-looking skin as the system turns on the growth of healing and protective factors. And instead of stress-induced immune system suppression, you'll find yourself with fewer colds and infections and be less likely to confront cancer. Simple idea? Yes. But don't blow it off. The best ideas always are.
Hey, welcome back to the Dr. Peach Show. Yes, last week we had two of our favorite correspondents, Greg Panos and Richard Cray, check out VRLA. Now, these guys have been into virtual reality for a very long time and explored all the new technologies that were being shown off there, some of which I think may be interest to you folks, our listeners. Like Intel, for example, was showing off their idea of the classroom of the future. What do you think Intel would want to say about education in the future? Also, there were people that were exploring other types of environments like chill out areas. What would the future chill out area look like? So we'll get some answers from those guys there. And while we're waiting for the connection, let me share with you an interesting thing in the news. A new use for Twitter I thought was kind of cool. It was called International Dawn Chorus Day. Yeah, International Dawn Chorus Day, D-A-W-N. And basically, the idea was that Twitter users of this hashtag would wake up super early and record birdsong. And then everyone would share their birdsong with each other on that Twitter feed. I have a link to that. Pretty cool. They have a wren song and robins, blackbirds, owls even, all linked in at dawn for people exploring birds at dawn. Kind of fun. We have Greg on?
Hey, I'm here.
All right, good. There you go. Okay. So how did we finally get through to you? In regular phone line?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys. Well, welcome. Last week we talked to you, Greg, and Cosmo Scharf about VRLA, and it happened, right? And you guys were there, and you got some of the latest and greatest news to share with us on that.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it. First of all, how big was the event?
It was huge. There were 2 days. The first day was the professional day, yeah. And it was pretty sparse compared to the second day, which was less expensive. So there were lots and lots of people there. If there are any interesting VR experiences that were to be checked out, it looked like the wait was an hour or 2 hours in some cases.
Yeah,
it looked like being at Disneyland.
Right, you have to wait for a long time. Well, that's the thing. Did they solve that problem? Because one of the things at VR is that you want to try it. You want to see where these worlds are, where you're going to be taken. You come to a booth that looks interesting, and there's like a dozen people in front of you, and each one takes at least 5 minutes. And you're going to stand in line? No. And that happens time and time again. Did they have any solution to that?
Well, one of the interesting things, when I go to VR conferences, I would rather check out the experiences on my own home system. So I don't get online, I don't try them in a public context. One of the reasons is because I haven't been convinced that they solved the hygiene problem with sharing visors in a public context.
Right, because they're passing us like sharing glasses, only even more personal.
Yeah, something.
Headphones, glasses. Face. Yeah. Now, what did you see there that might help alleviate that issue?
Well, that's the interesting thing. There was a company there called CleanBox. They built a VR visor cleaning device, like a little box, and you put the visor in, and it blasts air, and it vacuums air out, and it uses ultraviolet light, and it runs for about 1 minute.
Oh, and it's like a car wash for your visor.
Visor, right. Oh. So they put a nano coating on the visors, too, to assist with bacteriostatic effect, preventing bacteria from settling on it. But the device itself really dislodges any of the debris and everything and then vacuums it out within this little box.
So presto, 1 minute, you have a clean visor ready for the next person.
Right. Yeah, and it uses compressed air to dislodge it.
Cute. And clean box.
Yeah, filter. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, a very practical device for VR, which is not particularly an experience.
Yeah.
Some things that we saw was a HoloCap, which is a volumetric video.
Okay, now volumetric video in VR. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you like have a person from a live video appear in a virtual space, or what?
It uses a special camera.
Uh-huh, the depth camera.
It photographs you in 3D from the front, and it takes that information and reconstructs it in VR as like you're standing right in front of the person in VR. So
it makes a 3D digital image of you and puts it into a VR space. Now, is it a live video, like a live image, or is it an avatar that you then control?
No, it's live video of you, like Princess Leia from Star Wars.
Only live.
Except it's fully colored. So anytime you see any of these holographic projections, people in science fiction, it looks like that. And I think someday this will replace the telephone, really. And we're using video and FaceTime and things like that now. Well, this is sort of the next step beyond that into the third dimension.
Hmm. I guess it's all up to the projection system on the other end then to make it really compelling. We've got the recording side down, it sounds like. But right now the projection happens in virtual space. You go into virtual worlds and you can see people projected there. And that works pretty well from normal reality to virtual space.
Right. Huh. It's immersive, and the person that's making the call or talking to you can be in any kind of constructed environment.
Yeah.
And they're sort of inserted into the space.
Nice, nice. So literally, easy access to virtual worlds from live, basically what seems like live video, live capture of yourself.
Yeah. They're not the only ones working on it. There's about a half a dozen startups working in this field. I think it'll be pretty common, at least until the phone companies get wind of it and they said, oh, wait a minute, guys.
What's beyond the smartphone?
this is ours. We got this.
Once it reaches a certain level of reality, they probably would be interested.
Yeah. Well, you know, they control a pipe, and it takes a pipe to make a call. So. Mm. So another thing that went on is there was a VR talk show that was broadcast live.
In high fidelity,
into the high fidelity virtual world. And they had some people from the studio in Canada that were the interviewers, and they interviewed some of the guests, and they were represented as avatars and driven by the controllers and the headsets. So they're
okay. Avatars. So it was like a CNN news panel, only the people, instead of on television, were at a virtual desk and virtual avatars as they gave their reports.
Right. Well, they were standing on a little bit of a virtual stage. Somewhere else in the world and you weren't at the conference, you could basically, as an avatar, you could be immersed and standing right in front of them, and you're watching them wave their hands and talk and be interviewed. That was kind of fun.
How was the presence on that? Did it feel like you were live or with them?
Yeah, I was at the show, so I didn't have a machine to climb into VR and to witness the production that was being broadcast from the show.
Well, it's good that they tried that. That's cool.
Yeah, I think they did tape it with a regular video, and they put that on YouTube, so it's findable now to look at.
What would I search for that, do you think?
Studio Capon, CAPON. And VRLA, those would be the search terms you would want to combine to find it in YouTube.
Okay, so if you want to see a VR talk show, since you're into talk radio here, why not VR talk show? Check that out.
Google had a little booth there with some of their research scientists that have developed light field camera array, which is a semi-circular string of cameras that are arranged in a little arc, and that camera makes an arc around in a circle as it scans the environment.
It's a very specialized
image.
Yeah, it looked like at least 20, maybe more GoPro cameras all on an arc that looks like on the edge of a circle.
Yeah.
Now, what is that?
They may have used YI or Yi cameras, which are about the same size. But anyway, the interesting thing about it is the way the cameras are arranged and
yes.
the way they sweep the camera array around when they do a photograph.
Does that give you more dimensionality in a photograph or what? I mean, that's a lot of cameras to do that.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is with regular 360-degree photography, even with viewing it in VR or with any kind of headset, you look around and you're in a bubble looking around. In some cases, you have a stereoscopic view where you have some sense of depth, but you can't move right, left, or backwards or forwards.
No, it's like you're Glenda the Good Witch of the West traveling around in your bubble above Oz.
Yeah, in a bubble. You're stuck in the center of the bubble at all times. You can't move around.
A photosphere.
But with this technology, it's called light field technology. Mm. The name of the camera they gave it was called the Oddity, O-D-D-I-T-Y, camera. It is kind of odd looking, but with light field, you have some degree of lateral movement because it does a spatial capture. And you can lean right and lean left and lean forward and lean back and feel as if you're in a room. When you're in real life, you look around, you see things that have a certain sense of depth to them.
Okay, so if you were looking at something like a diamond, you'd be able to turn your head left and right and see different glints or different views of the facets?
Right, or if you're in a room that's got a lot of decorations around you, you'll be able to see them move in reference to each other slightly as you're moving right and moving left. Which you can't really do with a 3D photograph. If it's a stereo 3D 60 photograph, immersive photograph, you can see that there's depth there, but you can't really move right or left and watch the depth change slightly.
Right, you see the same image. You're not seeing a slightly, I guess it's like a slightly different image when you move.
So for you, you know, perceptually, that's a big deal. It gives you a sense of presence that does not exist otherwise.
So it must be recording all those different angles then. That's why it has all those cameras, to record all those
different... They put the cameras to the field, and it gives them a varying level of positions from which to record the image. And then those get all fused together into a single view, and then they place the views in a little virtual museum, and you can step from one room to the next.
Nice. And then we have an example of that up on the site, I believe. Greg, can you hold on? We'll be right back. We've got to go to a commercial break. We're talking to Greg Panos on VRLA. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Greg Panos about what happened at VRLA last weekend. I read it in the descriptions of the Intel Virtual Classroom, their idea of the classroom of the future. What did you see there?
Yes, Intel has been collaborating with the Smithsonian Institution to digitize in 3D all of their artifacts. And a lot of their artifacts, they don't even make it into an exhibition because they're in storage, let alone get handled or viewed by the public.
The Smithsonian, don't they collect everything?
I mean, yes.
Huge, right? So they have literally millions of artifacts that people haven't seen in back rooms. Sounds like I'm talking to aliens.
Sorry about that.
I see. Multitasking, are we?
I just threw the phone against the wall.
Okay.
So back
to the Intel Virtual Classroom.
They collaborating with Intel. Intel is using various scanning and 3D digitizing technologies to gather and capture and clean up the models of all the various things that are stored there.
Yeah.
And then they can share them virtually online, in the web, in virtual classrooms. Instructors can talk about them and discuss them, and the students that are visiting the virtual classrooms can pick them up and inspect them and look at them from different angles in a manner that they would never have been able to do in real life.
So if you wanted to pick up a vase from a Roman era, all the students could have their own copy of the vase and look at the drawings on it or the design and stuff like that, while a teacher might give you an overview of what you're looking at, something like that.
And peg information to each of these objects so they can bring up a deeper dive about its history and other things that might relate to these objects. One of the virtual worlds called Sansar is one of the places where they have this space set up as a classroom where people who are experts and archaeologists that have knowledge about these artifacts can conduct seminars with the students and show the various objects.
These are online virtual classrooms where various experts are showing their objects, and the students get to have copies of them as they learn. And this is in the Sansar world, you said? S-A-N-S-A-R. Is this an ongoing thing or just for the show?
It's just getting going. And Sansar is one of the first virtual worlds that they used to prototype the idea. So perhaps they'll migrate it into some of the other virtual worlds, or they'll build their own 3D navigable environment.
Yeah, put it in the Oasis or something.
Yeah, a sort of a subset of one of the other virtual world scenarios that they license. Hmm. There's also the Renwick Gallery has an exhibition called The Art of Burning Man. Intel basically digitizing this experience so you can go to Burning Man and navigate around it in 3D and look at all the 3D digital captured artwork.
Oh, really? Well, I remember we used to know an artist who created VR Burning Man.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Johnson, wasn't it? Yeah. So this is taking that. It's a dream that's been going on since the turn of the century, that Burning Man could be shared in a way where you could catch some of the magic and be there for those that didn't want to weather the dust storms and such.
Yeah, so this idea of micro amusement parks and micro museums in VR is an exciting new venue for a lot of the traditional ways of experiencing history and artifacts. And
I would say it's the closest, to me, it sounds like the closest thing we've had to a true time machine. You know, where you can play with objects, you can play with the immersivity of the sound, the background, ambience, the sense of being there, if you will.
But you can't go back and shoot your grandfather and make you and make your whole family disappear.
Well, you could, but it would just be a game. It wouldn't be what really happened. So, Android Jones, now he's a visionary artist. I've seen his work at a number of galleries, festivals over the years.
Right.
And Burning Man and Theogen Village, I believe.
Right.
So he's developed an interactive amusement show, really, or something more for your entertainment and meditation, if you will, at the festivals. So it's kind of interesting that Intel is working with him.
Right. Right. So also there was a VR massage exhibit where there were a lot of people online where they were combining real massage with VR visors that were showing an immersive world where the people getting the massage could experience sort of a three-dimensional video of themselves getting a massage with ambient music and other things. I didn't do it, so I didn't get a chance to see what was going on in the visor, but...
So let me get this straight. You're lying there on a massage table with your headgear on, getting a massage, and you're seeing yourself getting a massage in the headgear. So
right.
It's like a feedback loop.
Right, with the visual surrounding you.
So you can see where the masseuse is touching you and such. I mean, you have another third-person point of view of yourself outside of your body.
It is kind of like an out-of-body experience.
Huh.
I think that's why it was so popular, and a lot of people waiting to check it out. I think we're finding VR is getting combined with lots of other physical things that people are separating until now, and now they're being combined, and it has a synergistic effect where the experience is enhanced by the virtual aspect that gets added to something that would otherwise be familiar, becomes spectacular and out of this world.
Yeah, especially if you can begin to transmit the other senses, smell, taste, touch. Touch seems to be something that's been a holy grail for a very long time. So it's just an interesting way of broaching the touch sense by having real masseuses while you're in virtual space.
Yeah, masseurs.
Yeah. What about actually transmission of touch through the technology? Like if you wanted to massage someone over a distance, has there been any breakthrough in that arena that you've seen?
Yeah, so there have been suits that have been developed that have air bladders all over inside of them that are actuated by an array of switches and controls that can be mapped onto a body model, which can be controlled through VR. And it allows people to feel as if they're being touched or pushed or shoved or tingled, or they feel warmth in their hand or shot at, you know, a shooting simulation, of which there are many from VR, lots of shooting games. This is a combination of haptic technology, it's called, and actuators in the physical world, massage chairs that you maybe have tried at places at Eldos and malls where you lie in the chair and your arms get rubbed, starting with your fingers, and then it moves up your arm to your shoulder. All these different sorts of devices that can be...
So real massage and VR are slowly coming together here. That sounds great.
Yeah, I haven't seen any really good implementations of that. I can't imagine people aren't thinking about it.
Yeah.
The chair manufacturers have to be scratching their head and figuring out, okay, where do we put a VR jack on this chair?
Yeah, one of these days, right? Now, in terms of these strange technology, you talked about something called a sound camera earlier. Now, what do you mean by a sound camera? What's that all about?
Well, that's not something that I saw at VRLA, but it's an array of acoustic microphones that are very carefully calibrated onto a plane, and they are fed into a computer which analyzes all the different times that sound arrives at each one of these little microphones and can create a visual representation of something in three dimensions that extend very far out into the environment.
So it can track a plane in the sky, something like that?
Because they're microphones that have a high degree of range, even beyond the human hearing. They can hear a rotor wash from a drone that might be very, very far away that you can't hear. And they can hear it, and you can't see the drone either because it's so far away. But they can show a little red dot flying around the sky because the sound camera can detect the drone and can localize it into the field of view and simulate it with a display indicating its position.
Fascinating. So, okay, we don't have much time left, so I wanted to get a couple other things. One was you had mentioned the Memory Palace. Zuckerberg demonstrated this on his F8 performance. I wanted to just tell us just in, I guess, 30 seconds now what that is, and then we got to go.
Okay. So, yeah, Oculus made to build 3D environments from photographs that you might have, kind of like the Microsoft PhotoSynth, which was used for outdoors. But it's for interiors. You can bring back the memory of your childhood if you have pictures of your playroom.
Yeah, so you can take old pictures of your playroom and bring them into life in a three-dimensional model and re-inhabit them. Well, great, Greg. So much to cover, but thanks for trying to get all this in. Appreciate it. That's Greg Panos. This is the Dr. Feature Show. We were talking about VRLA last weekend in L.A.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. Thanks.
KSCO Santa Cruz.